of the original team from Indian Council of Medical Research, and they were doing all the autopsies right then. And he's an old man now, and you know, I went to meet him as part of the oral history that I was doing. And as he was you know, showing me the slides, he kept telling me that this is the picture of hell. Can you name a single of the writers that you teach or read who can describe hell better than this? And they start speaking my language, you know. So I personally think that my being a person from literature has worked in my favor in a very, very big way.
Sarupa Mukherjee spoke with Claudia Cragg in 2009. Since then, she published the book Surviving Bhopal, Dancing Bodies, Written Texts, and Oral Testimonials of Women in the Wake of an Industrial Disaster. She also wrote two books on Bhopal for young people. The International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal is still very active in 2025. They now number the victims at around 500,000 people. Updates at bhopal.net. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. I'm Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning and welcome to Film at 11 here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Well, I'm joined once again by Mona Bowen, and we're going to tackle a couple of new films and a TV show or two. And so welcome, Mona.
Thank you for having me again.
Okay. Before we start, though, I want to mention two movies that cable listeners might want to keep on the alert for. The first one is The Seed of the Sacred Fig, directed by the Iranian director and exile Mohammad Rasoulioff, and it's a film shot clandestinely in Iran because he's a persona non grata, and it's been getting terrific reviews. And then secondly, I'm Still Here, the new film by Walter Salles, and that is set in the world of the disappeared. And meanwhile, Mona, you...
Well, I just want to mention, for anyone who doesn't know, right now we're in the middle of the 35th annual Cascade Festival of African Films for Black History Month.
I know. What
years? 35 years.
That's amazing.
So what's even more amazing is most of these are North American premieres from very well-known and lesser-known African filmmakers from all over Africa. But every single one of these screenings is free. You just have to show up to get a ticket. And I highly recommend you check it out. It's you can find them online. I think if you just search, it's africanfilmfestival.org. And you'll have the whole schedule. Almost everything is at the PCC Cascade campus.
Right.
And highly recommend you check any or as many of these out as you can. They look amazing. I'm very privileged to be friendly with one of the organizers of this. And,
oh, fantastic. But then also the fact that it's free is amazing because...
Yes, I don't know how they do it.
It's fantastic. Anyway, yes. So we're going to talk about a couple of movies. Let me also mention Becoming Led Zeppelin.
I'm going to form my own band, and I know what it is that I want to do with it.
Oh, Jimmy's forming a band. You should give him a call. So I did.
The first time we played together, you could tell it was going to be a good group.
It was an electric atmosphere, and that had been what I'd been waiting for.
Jimmy produced the album.
I wanted it to be something that they hadn't heard before.
The press didn't seem to like us.
It got ripped to pieces. People wouldn't even book the band.
Our manager, Peter Grant, gets a tour together in America.
We're backstage at the Fillmore, and Peter says, if you don't crack it here, it's over.
Which is should be out soon. This is a documentary about the band, of course. But what's interesting about it is that it starts with their beginnings and then moves to when they played at the Royal Theatre in London. So before that, they're just a bunch of kids from the Midlands yet with remarkable musical skills, singing, playing bass. The late John Bonham is considered one of the best drummers of all time. And so the four of them eventually get together. But getting there took a little bit of a trip. For one thing, these were not just kids who knew how to play an instrument. It's very not like the Beatles. They were professional musicians from the beginning. And in fact, two of them, John Paul Jones and Jimmy Page, were studio musicians. Believe it or not, both of them worked on, of all things, the song Goldfinger. John Paul Jones did the arrangement, and Jimmy Page did some guitar work. And they were studio musicians who eventually joined the Yardbirds and then continued as the Yardbirds when all the other members left, but then decided they had a vision, which was they wanted to do albums. They no longer wanted to have anything to do with singles. They thought albums were the wave of the future. And that would give them a chance to do all the experimentation and interesting songs that they wanted to do. So the middle of the film is that transition from finding somebody who would, in America, turned out to be Atlantic Records, that would give them the freedom to make these full concept albums. And the movie ends with that Royal Hall concert. So it doesn't get into anything about touring or the groupies or some of the terrible charges against them. I mean, they're total Me Too candidates in real life, but they're quite charming.
Yeah.
Quite charming in the documentary itself. They don't seem to be in the same room at the same time, which makes me wonder if they even get along anymore. But they don't say anything against each other. All they do is praise each other. So, I mean, and also they produced the movie, so it's not like there was ever any danger of it being. But still, it's a really interesting peek into the world of 60s and 70s rock music and key transitions. I keep forgetting that Led Zeppelin is a rhythm and blues band. And so there's a major influence of African-American music from the South and all of America, really. And it's great to be reminded of that. So, you know, becoming Led Zeppelin, it's exactly what the title says, how the band members met each other, got together, and their vision of the future. So that's another movie to keep your eye out for. So tell me about Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy, which is on Peacock and is directed by a fellow named Michael Morris, who's famous for TV episodes. For example, he worked on Better Call Saul, for example.
Is that the tree, Adonis?
If you don't shag him, I will.
How old are you?
28.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm 29.
We are about to embark on an adventure.
You sure you're up to this?
I'm your girl.
Do you miss Dada sometimes?
I miss him all of the times.
Can you survive?
I think so.
It's not enough to survive, you've got to live.
Was that the Dalai Lama?
Just Harry Styles, I think.
So here it is. It's on Netflix, is it not?
I don't think it's on Peacock. It's on Peacock.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. You're right.
Peacock,
I just said that.
It's streaming free.
Oh, really?
Well, so this is the fourth Bridget Jones movie. And I'm really pleased to say everybody is back. There's no replacement actors. Every single actor from the first movie is back playing their original parts. And so is all the original cast, which is delightful. It's the fourth movie. And I got to say, I wasn't expecting much. I think there was a little bit of diminishing returns. As the third movie was okay, but I didn't find it nearly as charming as the first movie, which I rewatched the other day just to get up to speed on my Bridget Jones lore. but not only is Renee Zellweger back as Bridget Jones, and Hugh Grant is back as Daniel Cleaver, and Colin Firth is back as Mark Darcy, and all of the people who played her friends are back, and people who played her parents are back, which is really delightful. Although now she is a grown woman, having been married to Mark Darcy, and they had two children. And sadly, at the beginning of the movie, and this is not giving anything away, Mark has passed away.
Right.
Although, how does he show up? He shows up in their memories, which is mm-hmm. really lovely. It is 10 times more charming than it had any reason to be, honestly. I think it could have skated on the past glories of this series, but I thought it was delightful. I thought it was lovely. It's, you know, her little family is struggling with the loss of their husband and dad, but she is still surrounded by, you know, her friends, and she ends up going back to work as a TV producer. And of course, it's Bridget Jones, so comedy and awkwardness ensue. But
Daniel Cleaver is there. I mean,
he's grown into being a slightly scandalous uncle to mm-hmm. the children, and they're still very good friends. And he's really just it's not gross like it was in the first few movies. And Chiwetel Ejiofor, who's one of my favorites, shows up, and he is delightful in this as well. And if you're a Bridget Jones person, see the movie. It's really okay. They got me. I cried. I was very charmed by it. I thought it was really sweet and funny, of course, and none of it felt I didn't feel sometimes in movies like this, when they do bring back people, it feels like a fan service in a way that's all it's for. All of the appearances by everyone who appeared, it felt correct for this film. It felt proper. It felt right. And if this is the last Bridget Jones movie, I think this is a perfect little capper, you know?
Well, yeah. It's a love story, and not to spoil it too much, but she does have a relationship with a much younger man, hence the subtitle, mm-hmm. Mad About the Boy. But then she finds an actual mate later with somebody, I won't reveal the secret, but it's about, it starts with a meet hate as opposed to a meet cute.
Yeah.
I think that there's a motivation issue in how this person transitioned from an unpleasant person to really liking her. And I'm not sure how that happens, but maybe you understand it, follow it better than I do.
Well, it is a rom-com. So, I mean, there is... it does have a formula. There's a couple of scenes in the, a third of the way through the movie where they have more of a chance to get to know each other,
right?
In a kind of a sweet way, you know, that doesn't feel gross or icky. And I do like the relationship she has with this younger man, you know, the previous one. I really enjoyed the movie very much, and so it may not be your cup of tea, but I'm a very I don't have a lot of tolerance for crappy rom coms, you know.
Uh-huh. Oh yeah.
I thought this one was delightful, and it really helps that Helen Fielding, of course, the original writer, did write the screenplay. There's nobody knows the characters better than she does. So, yeah,
that's true. Okay,
yeah, I would recommend for anyone who's a Bridget Jones fan. I think you'll be pleased. Yep. Okay.
Well, then
what's next?
Now we move on to the Gorge.
I have new orders that require me to go dark for at least a year, maybe more. A special assignment in an undisclosed location.
As an elite sniper, are you presently under any private or military contract?
No. There's not a lot of reasons for me right now.
What if I gave you a reason?
There she is. West Tower Observation Post. Your home for the next 365 days. There is no outside communication here.
What's that on the other side?
That is East Tower. Contact with the other side is strictly forbidden.
So what's the mission? To keep people from going in the gorge?
No. You need to stop what's in the gorge from coming out.
What the hell is that?
The gorge is the door to hell. and we're standing guard at the gate.
Which is a film credited to the writer Zach Dean and directed by Scott Dietrichson, who I suppose is most famous for directing the first Doctor Strange movie for the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. And it's really mostly a twofer in that Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy, who are basically snipers, and they're assigned this unusual task of keeping watch over the gorge, but on opposite sides of the gorge. So he's on one side, let's say the west side, and she's on the east side. But they're never, they're not to contact each other. But they do, and I found that, I have to say, I found it really charming what they do, which is they, since they have telescopes and whatnot, they write notes to each other, you know, like it's a Mad Libs game or something, where they're saying hello, and they, you know, it's almost like an email relationship, only that it's through, you know, this old style of communication called paper and pencils. I know that they exist still, and so the first hour of this movie I found it very intriguing, even in some ways lovely love story.
Mm-hmm.
And then the action starts. And well, then
it's funny because it is sort of a rom-com. There's a little bit of a rom-com in that early section.
Uh-huh.
Where they're getting to know each other, you know. It has a lot of different elements to it, you know.
True.
It is a love story, it is a rom-com, it is action adventure.
I will also say that Miles Teller and Anya Taylor-Joy have some remarkable chemistry. Mm-hmm. Even when they're not in the same room. Mm-hmm. When they're sending the messages to each other. But then once they do get together, Miles Teller is charismatic, even when he's just standing there looking across the gorge. And Anna Taylor-Joy has the most amazing look. She's Amanda Seyfried is another performer whom I just, you can't take your eyes off her because she's so different looking, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway.
Well, and I buy both of them are like special forces sharpshooter types.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And I buy both of them as being capable.
That's true.
That, yeah, which is not always true of these kinds of films. And I absolutely buy Anya Taylor-Joy as being a badass.
That's true. She got her feet wet in the last Mad Max movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So she's not unfamiliar with that kind of shooting and so forth. But what you are supposed to be wondering about is, what is this about the gorge itself? What's down there? And the second half of the movie is a lot of action running through the forests, etc., shooting this or that, but also a lot of backstory. Like, what is the gorge? How did it come to be? Why the two sentinel towers? What's going on? So everything is answered. And Sigourney Weaver is also in the movie as the person who has assigned them these tasks of the sentinels, but you soon learn that she's got a hidden agendum, as they say.
Yeah, well, the Sigourney Weaver is now in these kinds of roles, I've noticed, where there's mm-hmm. something nefarious going on behind the scenes, but because she shows up, I don't think it's giving anything away that early in the movie when she shows up, you know, there's something shady.
That's
about
true.
Her.
Yeah, it's a little foreshadowing too much.
So, you know, it's interesting because you know, I love an action adventure shoot 'em up. I love that kind of stuff. I thought that was the weakest part of the movie. The answers, I guess, to what happened. I really enjoyed the movie. I really liked it. I'm going to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot watch this movie asking too many questions because a lot of it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It's nonsensical.
It's, you know, it's an interesting movie because for a while in the 80s, there was this, 70s and 80s, there was this phenomenon of the two-part movie where the first half is one movie. Principal example would be The Black Stallion.
And Predator.
The Black Stallion is there mostly on an island, And then the second half, almost right in the middle, it stops mm-hmm. and it becomes a new movie where they get off the island and the Black Stallion becomes a racehorse under the aegis of Mickey Rooney. And but that's not the only one. There were numerous ones at the time where they just basically fused two different stories together. And this is what is happening here, I think. It's a throwback to that old way of creating narratives in Hollywood movies.
Well, that's fine with me. I mean, Predator is one of my favorite movies. And you go to Predator, and the first third of it is army guys shooting stuff up. And then, oh, wait a minute, there's a space monster? You know, like, where does that come from? You know, it's a little shocking transition there about how that happens. But I like that. I don't, that to me is not jarring or weird. I just more like the logic of what is going on is I found it to be a little silly, but I was okay. I went with it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm going to stick with Anya Taylor-Joy and Miles Teller because I'm really enjoying seeing them together on screen and doing mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Now, in the realm of television,
yes,
we've got a couple of shows. We'll dispense with Yellow Jackets first, but then move on to Paradise.
Someone's trying to hurt you for what you did, not just in the wilderness, but what you did when you got back.
We keep telling ourselves Mom is a good person. What if she's actually a bad person?
There's a new sheriff in town.
It's Citizen Detective, idiot.
It's been a long time, but it could be happening again.
This place will follow us for the rest of our lives.
I had nothing to do with any of this.
Everything is falling apart.
Yellow Jackets is its third season is about to start. It gleaned a lot of attention when it first came out. I guess that you would call it a version of Lost, another Lost imitator. And it's done by the people who did the TV series Narcos. I don't really see a profound connection between that series and this one, but it's about a team of soccer playing teenagers, female teenagers, who are off to a championship, but the plane they're in crashes in the Canadian wilds. Not such a ridiculous, there's a lot of unexplored Canada. So it's plausible that this could happen, but that now they're lost and they have to make some really tough decisions about what to do, how to survive, etc. So the third season picks up after the somewhat shocking conclusion to season two, where one of the major characters dies. You weren't particularly interested in this series. You found what was your reaction to it the first time around?
Well, I will say what drew me in, I think the cast is sensational. Melanie Lynskey, who I think just never gets the kind of accolade she really deserves.
Agreed.
Melanie Lynskey is so amazing. She's so great. And then also Christina Ricci is in it. And it's just a really great cast. So these are people who will absolutely hold your attention, you know. But I mean, just to watch Melanie Lynskey on screen makes me happy. So it is one of those before and after shows. There's something happened in the past and now we're in the current time, right?
Correct. And it goes back and forth. And sometimes it can be a little hard to follow because you don't really get to know all of the teenagers.
Yes. So, the premise of the show I like, but I did watch the first couple of episodes. I think I watched through episode three, and I just didn't want to stick with it. I found it to be a little too vicious for me, which is shocking. but there was something that kind of turned me off. I may revisit the series in the future when it's completed. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, let me just interject that the producers or manufacturers of the show vow that they've written a complete 5-season story arc.
That's good.
So it's going to be a while before.
All right. But that's good, because if they complete the story, that's one thing. I mean, there's a lot going on in this series.
That's
like
true.
It is very, and you know, there's a lot of secrets held and mystery and stuff like that. which I do find intriguing. I think I'll revisit it. I don't know. I do really love these. I mean, Juliette Lewis is in it. Elijah Wood shows up. I mean, it's a really phenomenal cast. And even the lesser known names, I think, are wonderful. And the people who are playing the younger characters of Melanie Lynskey and Christina Ricci, et cetera, are so good. They really seem like they've spent a lot of time together to get each other's. Yeah. I understand why people love it. I think maybe it's not for me.
Yeah. That may be it. Yeah. Again, I would say that go back and Showtime is reshowing all of the episodes in order. So one can go back and watch the first three as you did, and that will determine whether this is something that you want to watch.
I do think it is one of those things, one episode won't tell you enough.
Not at all. No. You got to watch at least three or four. No. And then finally, we are going to talk about Paradise, which is, the Truman Show meets JFK or something. And it's created by Dan Fogelman, who, if I remember right, there's so many this and us things. This Is Us, I think, was...
Yeah, he did This Is Us, yep.
And he has a hand in Only Murders in the Building. But this
also wrote one of my favorite Disney movies, Tangled.
Oh, which one?
He wrote Tangled.
Tangled, oh, okay.
Which is the funniest one of all. It's so good.
Anyway. Well, this stars Sterling K. Brown as a member of the Secret Service, Julianne Nicholson as the Sigourney Weaver role, so to speak. And also James Marsden as the President of the United States. Mm-hmm. And there's all sorts of people, you know, wives, ex-wives, lovers, a father with dementia, a missing mother, kids. It's packed with information. And it's set in this bucolic-seeming town where...
But wait, don't give it away.
I'm not spoiling it.
Because I feel like, you know, when I watch the movie, if you don't know the premise of this show at all, you're watching it. Here's the president, his Secret Service agent. Things are going on. It is very bucolic. It seems very normal. Everything is regular, all American, but everything's a little bit off. And that's the way, like, they're in the Oval Office, but that's not quite the Oval Office, or is it? You know? And that's the thing. I have not been so surprised in a long time by a show. Norm, you know how annoying I am. I always know who the murderer is
in any
thing within 15 minutes. This show got me. I'm still on the fence as to whether I like it or not, but I'm very intrigued. It's weird. I can't sort of look away.
There's only been four or five episodes so far of eight.
Right.
So all will be resolved shortly, and then you'll know whether you like it
or not.
Will
it be resolved? I don't know.
You're right. It could. Depend on anything anymore.
But there have been five episodes so far, and
each one ends with a great big surprise.
It does. And I will say, I don't think there's ever going to be a bigger surprise than the ending of the first one.
That's true.
I was like... I was watching with a friend, and we both were like mouths agape.
Yes.
Absolutely. Like, and then I'm like, what the hell is happening here? I need more. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we've been talking to Mona Bowen once again. Thank you. We've covered several things. I have a couple of movies to look out for, a music documentary, Bridget Jones, Mad About the Boy, and The Gorge on streaming services. And then Yellow Jackets, about to embark on its third season. And finally, Paradise, one of the more agreeably surprising suspense episode series so far. So it's great talking to you, and we'll get together and let's talk about more music documentaries.
I love that. There's some good ones out right now and some coming up as well. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mona.
My pleasure. Great to see you.
Okay. I'm running out of time here, so I'm just going to hit the end thing.
Okay, well, you're going to cut out that whole part about how Renee's...
Yes.
Again, thanks for listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland. Film at 11. We'll be back next Friday. So until then, please keep watching the screens.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality?
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Good morning. I'm one of the hosts on KBOO.